if you're elevating a deviant sexual practice to the level of your constitutive human identity, well, then there's going to be not only inherent instability, but ultimately some real darkness that's going to be hiding or be revealed.
Welcome to the Stand Firm Podcast. We are recording this episode on Tuesday, June 17th, 2025. I'm Nick Lannon of Grace Anglican Church in Louisville, Kentucky. And after a week off, I'm here with Matt Kennedy of the Anglican Church of the Good Shepherd in Binghamton, New York, and J.D. Koch of St. Luke's Anglican Church on Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. Gentlemen, how are you doing today?
Great, Nick. Thanks.
Well, J.D., you're only got a couple more weeks there on Hilton Head. How are things going with the transition?
I mean, as far as these things go, it's great. I mean, as I've been sort of joking, it's better to be mourned when you leave as opposed to being celebrated. But it is bittersweet. Anyone that's with few exceptions, been involved in pastoral ministry knows that there's never a clean break or a good time to leave in a certain sense, because it's relational. And so there's people that, you know, we hope we stay in touch with and trust that, you know, with all the negatives that come with social media and the internet, the positives are that we are relatively easy to check in on, at the very least. It's been a sweet time. I mean, the Lord has blessed our time here. It's been when on the other side of the lawsuit, I mean, the freedom that we've had to sort of just walk into reaping the harvest of the kind of long suffering, frankly, that people endured here for 10 plus years has been, you know, in a certain sense, some of the most fruitful ministry of my life. I mean, it's been wonderful. So I'm excited for the future. Nevertheless, you know, I mean, the way the Lord works, you know, there's a constellation of factors that all come together at the right time to make it clear that, you know, he wants you to go left instead of right, or vice versa. And so we're not mourning the next step, but, you know, there's a season for saying goodbye, which, you know, ever since watching Muppets Take Manhattan, you know, in the song, saying goodbye, going away, seems like it's always a hard thing to say. You know, that I remember as a small child weeping at that. And now I keep, for whatever reason, it's being brought up into my remembrance every time I say goodbye to people. But we're excited. I think that Paris is in a wonderful situation, and it's really primed for someone to continue just to take and build on what, you know, by God's grace, I was given to build upon. And so, it'll be exciting to see how it all works out.
But I can't imagine anyone wanting to go to Hilton Head of all places.
That's right. It is suffering for the Lord down here. That's right. Yes. Maybe you can cut out the Muppets part. I don't know.
No way. That is so emblematic of what Holy Trinity in Hillsdale is getting that I want them to know. They're going to hear that from the pulpit eventually.
There's a lot of random. I have yet to do that. I remember that is a thing. We actually had Rosario Butterfield come.
Yeah. It was just like a secret. All of a sudden I saw.
It wasn't a secret. It was just don't listen. But she burst out into song, and she has a beautiful voice. And I was like, here's the next level, the next step. And it was very effective. She talked about how she you can watch it online. You should put a link in the show notes. Okay. But it was a great talk on her book, The Five Lies for Anti-Christian Age. And I was grateful that it all came together before we had announced our leaving, because it was sort of, kind of emblematic of what we have been trying to do the whole time here, which is to equip people for the defense of the hope that they have with the various, you know, resources available. And she gave an amazing talk. It's a delightful. I mean, I've met her a couple of times now, but she talked about the 23rd Psalm. And so she sang, you know, the sort of melodic refrain, and then interspersed it with kind of reflections in a very moving way. Like if I had read it, if it'd been like, here's how it's going to be scripted, I would have been a little suspect that how would it actually land. But it was, I don't think there was a dry eye in the place. I mean, it was really very powerful. So
I believe her church is one of those that sings the Psalms exclusively in worship. And so I'm not surprised that she, A, knows the Psalms really well, and B, can sing them well too.
Yeah, no Muppet songs there. No Muppets.
have you done your Dick Van Dyke accent for Holy Trinity yet?
I have not. I don't want to. You really must cut that out. The number of British friends that I have that I've unintentionally offended by using my incredibly accurate Dick Van Dyke English accent is I've given up.
I will not cut that out under pain of torture and death.
Fair enough.
But let's
Fair enough.
begin. So at the beginning of Pride Month a couple weeks ago, we got a letter to the mailbag, the standfirminfaith.com mailbag, from a listener sharing a Facebook post from one Austin Pecton, an ACNA pastor in Nashville, encouraging the church to take the opportunity afforded to us by Pride Month to listen to LGBTQ plus Christians, including, he said, those in his own parish community. Many joked about the surely soon to be forthcoming admonition from the provincial office in light of Archbishop Wood's letter of concern about Calvin Robinson. Of course, no such admonition came. Then a week or so ago, an organization called the J29 Coalition, one of these how to talk to your right-wing Christian uncle political organizations akin to the After Party, the J29 Coalition announced its roster of coaches, and Scott McKnight, canon theologian in C4SO, is one of them. Many people, Meg Basham, who seems to have done the research, is one of them, have said explicitly not to let these people into your church. Anyway, guys, it's Pride Month. More potential liberalism has been unearthed in ACNA. What are your thoughts? What's going on?
Well, I think it's safe. It, Matt, are you the one that broke this news? I mean, is this I was listening to Anglican Unscripted and they quoted you directly as being
Oh,
the whistleblower.
well, we should correct them because it's actually Mark Marshall. He
Well,
said,
that's what I was,
I didn't break
he
it.
took one for the team. That's right.
No, I didn't break it. Mark Marshall sent the, texted us, and or maybe you were on the text. I got it anyway. It's showing me the initial post this guy put up on Facebook, and he doesn't make any of the distinctions you might expect him to make if he's trying to hide it a little bit, couch his support for LGBTQ people in terms of who are, side B. You wouldn't know if there was any difference between side B or side A reading the note. And then, of course, he links to Kaleidoscope, which is an affirming organization, and encourages the people to go there. So
He doesn't
basically
include
the
any sort of struggle other than at the hands of right-wing, angry
right.
Christian uncles.
Exactly. If the church has wounded you and hurt you, the church needs to take this month and open its arms and listen, because we haven't listened enough to the LGBTQ community, and so that's why they're constantly being victimized by the church. It's such an interesting thing because for I think the last 10 years or so, I mean, they have been on top of the social hierarchy. They have been asserting power in corporations, in schools. They've been really chasing people out of the public square who disagree with them. But yet it's still like it's still for some reason the LGBTQ people come across as the victims when they've been victimizing people for a long time now. And so it's fascinating how the church, at least Austin Becton's of the church, buy the line, first of all, that that we are the church is the evil one, the evil entity. But also that, I think it's that letter that he wrote was, if you were to read that letter, 10 years from now, you'd probably date it somewhere around night or 2020, 2019, because in that sense, it's like the classic move that the left in the church tends to make, which is adopt all the world's causes like 10 years after the causes have died away. And I don't know if you guys have noticed, but I don't even know what Pride Month is like where you are, but I'm here in New York State. I live in a neighborhood that's primarily populated with professors and academics,
And one notable Satanist.
and one notable
Right.
Satanist, right?
That's right.
And even I. To 2020, this place, you saw pride flags everywhere this month. 2022 or 21, 22, 23, even last year. This year, Anna and I go on a walk, we counted three when we could have easily counted 20 or more in earlier years. It has been so silent. I don't even know if there's a parade or not this year, at least in Binghamton, which is fascinating that it's gone away. And it could be. I mean, I read an article that said that I forgot where I read it, that the regime change, I guess, the new president, and the change in the governmental stance is part of the cause of this, because it's probably the effect and the cause. Because when Obama began to really push the LGBTQ stuff, they sent signals to corporations, to schools, to all kinds of institutions saying, hey, you need to get on board with this or you're going to be in trouble. That's no longer the signal being sent out, and so it all goes away. Which in this article, the point of this article was, it really was artificial in the first place. People were just flying the flags, people were putting on the buttons, people were marching in the parades primarily to stay on the right side of things, but not really because of any a lot of people anyway, not because of any real heartfelt.
Well, it's Sultan Eason's Green Grocer. No, that's Vaclav Havel, the Green Grocer, I think. Vaclav Havel saying that, under the Communist Party, that you had the normal, green market guy, grocer, who I was just putting the party flag up because he just didn't want any hassle. He didn't want to deal with the extra, headache. And the moment that he didn't have to, it was like it all went out the window. I think that's in part what we're seeing. And I think also it has something to do, there's a couple of things you were mentioning. I think that the sensitivity to it, and we've mentioned this a bunch, is in part because it's such an inherently devious, diabolical, really, lifestyle that cannot be justified. And so there's a inherent sort of insecurity and instability to the sort of the idea of pride. Like Macbeth, methinks the lady doth protest too much. If you really were so proud of something, then you probably wouldn't have to say it so often. I mean, there are a lot of things that, and there's a lot of things that I'm confident in that other people disagree with, that I could care less about their disagreement, as long as it stays civil. But this is not one of those issues, because it is a it's an aberrant lifestyle that is attempting to gain normalcy, and there's a deep sort of spiritual ontological brokenness to it that will never be healed until it's absolved and confessed and repented of. And so as a result of that, like we've said before, you could have, well, we saw years ago. I mean, I was thinking of the picture in Vienna. I mean, I walked down the main street in the Strasse in Vienna, I mean, hundreds of times as our life there. And, I just picture it with those giant rainbow flags, hanging between the buildings, down all the way up to the St. Stephen's, the cathedral there. And, and that signaling, just a total overthrow of anything, particularly from a purportedly Roman Catholic, country, or at least historically so. And so that, that is obviously as loud as you could get. And yet, the quiet little whisper that says, "Thou shalt not," is silences all of that and speaks like the piccolo through the cacophony and says, "This is what's true," And so I think that's one aspect of it, which we've talked about before. But I also think that the what's also happened in the past 5 years is that the true sort of depraved reality that lies behind a lot of this has been revealed. Whether it's through the trans stuff, whether it's through the drag queen story hour, whether it's through just the actual pride marches themselves, and then the exposés of some of the debauchery that lies behind the kind of the facade of the queer eye for the straight guy. You remember that show, whatever, that was like, well, we're all normal, we're just like you, we just want to be happy, married with the kids in a white picket fence, and it's, oh, and also a sex dungeon and drug fueled orgies up, that permanently harm our bodies for, it's like, well, that's a different level. And I think that, I mean, honestly, I think that to the extent that a lot of that has been revealed, whether it's been through social media or just through reporting or just through interpersonal relation, has really has tainted the sort of the seeming normalcy of the entire community, as they call it. And again, that's not to point to any particular one person. I mean, I know there's always outliers, but in general, if you're elevating a sexual, a deviant sexual practice to the level of your constitutive human identity, well, then there's going to be not only inherent instability, but ultimately some real darkness that's going to be hiding or be revealed. And I think we're seeing people that have silently said, it's okay if you do you, but I'm not going to celebrate it. And praise God to a certain extent. It wasn't what I expected 5 years ago where we'd be here now. I mean, I don't know, it seemed like the inevitable march of history was going to be forcing us all to be putting on rainbow jumpers or whatever before we got thrown in prison. So it looks like we may have been spared for a moment.
As an example of what you're saying, what do you guys make of the fact that when this post of Father Becton's became much more widely known than I assume he expected it to be, or perhaps wanted it to be, including language like LGBTQ plus Christians, LGBTQ plus believers, which is language that has been explicitly our College of Bishops has explicitly asked us not to use. When it became more public, he deleted it. So rather than arguing for it or making a stand that you would have thought he would make when you read it in the first place, it seems like something he would have believed in wholeheartedly and would have wanted to defend, he removed it. So it's either an action by his bishop or just sort of a public, it's actually not that publicly acceptable, at least in ACNA, to hold this kind of view anymore. Is that how you take it?
I mean, I've seen this pattern before. Remember, you guys remember Greg Goebbels, who used to be
Sure.
the editor over at Anglican Compass, which is a much better publication now than it was. But he, po I think it was him. I think he posted, or so his wife posted something about the gay pride parade they're going to take part in 1 year, and that started back when people said, "Oh, look, they're going to the pride parade," and they in that. The pictures that she posted were circled all over Facebook and Twitter, and it took about 2 or 3 days, but he took it down, and that was not because he had any kind of remorse or this is bad. How do you need to take these things down? We don't want to support this cause, or but because it seems like he was getting pressure from his bishop.
Yeah, I'm sorry if what I did offended you. That sort of apology. I mean, that's the.
And I think that's my guess would be the same kind of thing is happening here, that this went viral in a way that Austin didn't expect, and it got to the point where his bishop heard about it. I know there were discussions going on the Episcopal level about this. So when this disappeared a day or two after it was put up, my guess is he got heat from that. But then the question will be, because I know there was Episcopal discussion about this, what now? Is he just going to remain a priest in good standing in the diocese for the sake of diocese of churches for the sake of others? Or is it going to follow the pattern that we've seen with the previous five churches in that diocese that have come
That's
out of
right. What is going on in Nashville area or whatever? Like what in the world? I mean, these are like leading Episcopal parishes, not even in terms of some of their convictions. I mean, these are not what I would have thought an ACNA parish would be like at all. And yet, just yet another. It's like Austin and Nashville. I mean, how many churches have
The table.
to be? Yeah, I mean, it's really. I mean, disappointing is one thing, but at the same time, I'm grateful that we found out, and I'm grateful that I mean, I don't know. Obviously, maybe he doesn't know how the internet works, but it's like, I mean, eventually that's going to come around,
Well,
and so.
that's the
But to your
power of
point, Nick.
needing to virtue signal, is that you can't keep it a secret. You could maintain this in a local church context and not tell anybody, but the whole point is that other people have to see how righteous you are.
Right,
And so ultimately they can't help themselves.
and that's the problem with like the marauding, crusaders within the ACNA who are sort of intent upon showing how rigid and hateful and fundamentalist, we really are. And so, I mean, there's a handful, and this is just one of the issues. But there's a low level drumbeat of kind of discontent with some of the fundamental convictions of the ACNA that we've been talking about for years now. That I think people who hold those really need to consider whether or not they're in the right denomination. I mean, whether it's LGBTQ stuff or abortion or well, those are two big ones. That we talk about often, but there seems to be a a real sort of allergy in some circles to what I would have considered the whole reason you would join this church in the first place, you know. And then we look at the reticence of people to speak. I mean, again, I don't want to, I say directly to posts like this. I mean, I don't want to live. We've talked about this in sort of the fear of everything we say being, you know, immediately censured. That being said, I expect that there were people listening who, when censure is necessary, that they would contact me. Hopefully not, you know, immediately with a public tweet or something. But you know, but I do expect that as a man under authority, and I think that we're witnessing some of the current weakness of our I don't want to say disciplinary structure, but at the very least our sort of common understanding of who we are and what we're about. Because if this can be allowed and put forth and then, you know, just sort of swept away without an explanation and, you know, and without a discussion. I mean, 'cause to your point, Nick, I mean, we could have this discussion, like what, you know, let's have it. I mean, if there are people, if there's more than this guy in the ACNA who think this is a post that was appropriate, well, let's have that conversation, you know, as opposed to just, you know, retreating back into our sort of increasingly fractured parishes. Because if it turns out, like with a number of other questions, that we're in the minority with respect to that, well, then, you know, that's a whole nother conversation that we'll have to have. But I don't think we are.
I don't think that's not the way it works either. That's not the way subversion works. You don't. I don't think they're in, I know we're in the majority right now, but they also know that. And so people who have those views are just quietly
That's right.
gathering
And you
and
throw it out and then you pull it
yeah.
back. I mean, then we see this, you know, you throw it out and you transgress and you pull it back. And this happens not just in church life. I mean, this is how the Overton windows is moved, you know, is that you, oh, I, you know, I may have overspoken, you know, I may have, of course, I'll pull it down. You know, and we saw this with the whole gay Anglican letter and things like that. You know, we saw this with the when we've seen this before. And so I just am hoping that people who legitimately believe that will either be challenged, you know, lovingly, and we can have that conversation, or they will willingly, like as we've seen with the table and some of the other places, realize that perhaps they're in the wrong denomination. Because certainly that conviction is held in other denominations, quote unquote church bodies, and will be celebrated there, but thank God not here.
Yeah, I do. I don't know. The point has been made a kajillion times, but it just it's beyond my
Is this
understanding.
about the moon and cheese? Is
No,
this about
but
I mean, it's fine if it is. I mean, I think it's a good point. I don't fully understand it, but.
I don't understand. I can't wrap my mind around the quickness with which there is an Archiepiscopal letter sent out with regard to Calvin Robinson. And then the absolute radio silence with regard to this. And if this were an isolated incident, like if Austin Becton were just one guy, you know, who popped off a letter like this, and now he's being reprimanded behind closed doors by his bishop, that's fine. But the fact is, this is again number six, I think. So the sixth pop up of pro LGBTQ affirming priests. And I'm not sure what his parish is like, but maybe his whole congregation is going in the same direction. That surely warrants some kind of questioning, some kind of investigation, some kind of
Well, even a clarification, you know, like if I were on the outside, like if I was in college, you know, I was talking to someone today about this, like, you know, when I was in college, I was sort of free agents because I had just grown up in the non-denominational church. And so, you know, I was looking at like the PCA, LCMS, you know, and then the conservative Episcopalians, and, you know, they were all sort of lumped together for me at the time, you know, having not done serious theological study and things. And I was just considering, like, what if you were like I was back then and looking at the ACNA from afar and watching this transpire and then saying, well, you know, if what type of church am I going to join? You know, is this illustrative? Is this endemic? Is this just an outlier like this? And at the very least, we could have some sort of clarification that from the people whose voices are louder and matter more than ours, that no, this is not acceptable. You know, this is not what we stand for. And in fact, this is in large part one of the cultural moments of our times that this church has been replanted to defend. You know, I mean, this is like the Arianism of our day, you know. And so we're like, where's the Athanasius of our province to speak clearly, against heresies, and it's been a little bit disconcerting and disappointing, frankly. But that being said, here we are. We're saying it. I mean, I'm thank God for the internet in this respect, and I think that there are people who, well, what we're watching is in real time in our church life. The same thing is happening in the broader culture, is that the sort of the traditional like authority structures and sort of communication networks are being subverted or at least sidestepped by just screenshots and X and podcasts, and we're not, and we're just a small little fish here, but the ponds, the ACNA is not that big either, but I mean, again, that's where I'm not shocked that there are people who have come into the ACNA with different views, and I'm not offended by it really, even to a certain degree, but I am concerned about the lack of response, and however gracious and gentle it could be, but nevertheless convicted and direct, because I would expect, if I came out with something like that, I would expect my bishop to call me. I would expect there to be some sort of at least explanation required. And probably if it had gone viral in public, which I would have been upset about, maybe, but some sort of public statement of correction or clarification. But here we are.
Well, you'll recall that after the college released its advice, Todd Hunter did publicly say that his, oh, maybe it was just in a letter to his clergy, that the college did not speak ex cathedra and that his clergy, as far as I remember, didn't need to abide by this advice. And I'm sure Austin would not admit to being affirming in this letter, though he does say very affirming sounding things like, quote, many LGBTQ plus believers have quietly remained faithful, praying, serving, forgiving, and longing for a place at the table already promised to them through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Though he says, that's the end quote there. Though he says nothing about repentance. He says nothing about mortification of sin, nothing about turning, anything like that. So there's this gray area, right? At least it's seemingly for C4 or so clergy who must feel able to use language like this until they finally, like in the case of these previous five churches, accidentally show up in a photo with Dan Hasseltine or accidentally get outed for really what they really believe, and then there's no going back, and then they have to leave.
I mean, I think this, so he writes, this month, perhaps we, the church, this is Father Becton. This month, perhaps we, the church, could practice a different kind of witness, not explaining or defending, but confessing, not
That's
performing.
us. That's the right wingers, not them.
Not exactly. Not explaining or defending, but confessing, not performing certainty, whatever that means, but walking in humility,
This is.
repenting not only for what we've done, but for what we've ignored, for who we've excluded, and for the ways we have been shaped by that exclusion, whether we realized it or not. I tend to think that's the giveaway paragraph where you're saying, where that tells me he's not just talking about people who are trying to remain faithful, live faithful sexual lives within the boundaries of Orthodoxy, even though they have same-sex attraction. He's talking about people we've excluded. We haven't excluded those people. He's talking about people we've excluded, which would, I think, necessarily be unrepentant people who are living in same-sex or homosexual relationships. I just can't read this passage. It's hard for me to read this letter and come out with any other conclusion than that this is an affirming guy, and he's come out with his affirmation. So.
Well, and it's another classic confession on behalf of the church, from someone who clearly doesn't think that he's part of the problem. This is just always the case. It's like, we have been doing so bad. The church has always, formed you. I'm like, speak for yourself, buddy. It's like, I don't know. If you sound like you really have some problems, if that's the case, but you're not speaking for me.
He's right to the J29 thing, doesn't it?
Well, that's exactly right, because I mean, there's just this incredible sanctimony and presumption, and the thing that makes me, it's almost embarrassing. Like, do people actually think that we care what they think? I mean, in a certain sense, like some of the people involved in this, sort of the sort of condescension and the well, again, the sanctimony that just drips off of these, like every David French article written, that there's sort of this increasing disbelief that we don't really care what Phil Vischer says, that we don't really care what, that the VeggieTales guy like really isn't doesn't have like a lot of moral ballast in my decision-making matrix, and so I feel like there's some limitless fund that keeps trying to repackage the same voices to say the same thing that they've been saying since 2015, since Trump came down the elevator or whatever, which was just the cracking institute. That was the when everyone's brain broke. But someone is telling to me this morning, like since 2020, all has become clear. It's just the sorting out has continued, and there's this like disbelief from a certain segment of what they call Big Eva, or like the former cultural elites, how whatever you want to call them, that there's people hear them, we know what you're saying, and we just frankly don't care. I mean, like we're happy for you to say that, but you just keep saying it louder and in different packages and call it something. Like, what is J29 anyway? I mean, I signed up for the cohorts. I can't wait to be part of that. I can't, but it's like, I mean, it's like I've been listening to this for 20 something years now, ever since we had to take anti-racism training back in 2003. We were way ahead of the curve in the Episcopal Church.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, I mean, look at some of these people on this J29, like Caitlin Scheiss. Like, if you ever read anything she writes, I mean, she again, I mean, she's just David French, Russell Moore, Scott McKnight. I mean, these again, we know Curtis Chang. I mean, we've heard these people. I feel like they come up in conferences in different sort of packages for every 18 months to say the same thing. Like Orange Man bad. Christian nationalism, be afraid of it. Certainty is well, what do you say that guy said? Certain
The
performative
performing
certainty.
certainty,
Stop performing certainty, right?
That's
Because
right. That's right. 'Cause we need to adapt the remember the curriculum that we had in the Episcopal Church, Nick, called the wandering, no wondering. We made fun of it. It was like it was for middle school kids, and it was wondering. So you end up, because it was wrong to actually say something
actually
definitive about
know
God.
anything, yeah.
That's right. So we made fun of it. We called it the wandering curriculum because it was like, just keep on wandering. But yeah, I think that's exactly what the for me, it's embarrassing only because I feel for, like, I don't know what the mindset would be if you had lost that credibility with a certain group that you're trying to attract. I mean, like, obviously when liberal progressive culture despisers of Christianity want to invite a someone to their party or to their masthead or whatever, they go to this list and they have a nice dinner and they print another iteration of the same screed against the quote unquote right wing Christian nationalists, and that's expedient for those people to however it goes. But the people that they're actually speaking to have heard, like I said before, have heard them and have largely ignored them. And it just seems to be it's kind of embarrassing. It's kind of embarrassing to watch. This is the next iteration, but I did think some of the loaded language in the J29 description was so obviously coded to helping the enlightened Austin Bechtons of the world deal with their benighted, knuckle dragging
How to
fundamentalist.
love your Christian nationalist neighbor or whatever. Oh my gosh.
I mean, wouldn't that be as easy as if you, let's just put it, say for a minute that you really thought your neighbor was evil, like, wouldn't the easiest thing in the world then just be to pray for your enemies, love those who persecute you? I mean, wouldn't that would be like just a very shortcut. Like, we don't need a cohort for that. Like, if you, we could argue about whether or not he genuinely was your neighbor, but if you were a progressive Christian who saw your right wing, you considered to be your right wing Christian nationalist neighbor, dealing with him would be as simple and as long standing from Jesus himself as simply to pray for him and love him as you would yourself. I mean, that's so
Well,
again, I
yeah,
mean,
I don't think the aim is right to love your neighbor though. It's to get your neighbor to change his mind. That's
that's
what
right.
the
That's right.
J29 is. Get your neighbor to repent of wrong think and to start having right think. And that's the aim. And I want to know what this, because the after party
That's right.
was geared toward getting people to think about politics in a more Christian way. That was the idea. That was what it's claimed, right?
Allegedly, like beyond party distinctives.
Beyond party. Okay. So this is taking this is the after party is taking it beyond the scope of just, hey, let's be nonpartisan and think about this in a neutral way, although that's not what the after party was, to, oh no, it's actually, if your pastor, if pastors have are more are conservative, or they voted for Trump, or they did, or they have a position that you oppose, this to the right of you, that's a problem that needs to be addressed and changed. So it's this is a taking a step further, it looks like, into activism rather than just, hey, let's all be together as Christians. At least as rhetoric goes, this seems to be a little bit further along the lines of let's get some changes working in the church.
Well, I think it's getting there because they're getting frustrated. I mean, I think,
Right.
I think that it's like, you say something gently and you say it a little bit louder, and then eventually you start grabbing for some, if the carrot's not working, the stick might. I mean, again, I'm not suggesting that they're looking at that, but I think that the
The beatings will continue until morale improves.
that's right. Well, it is. I mean, there is a divide here. I mean, there's an incredulity amongst the sort of the Holy Post, Phil Vischers of the world, as to, how can this not be? How can you not have heard us? How can you not, how can you persist in your Cracker Barrel eating when Whole Foods exists? I mean, that's the, remember that divide that he had? And so, I think, and because we talked about this a bunch, and I was asked a question the other day, a couple of weeks ago, which I thought was a good one, which is that, how do you pastor people when there is a pull to the right? I mean, there is a darkness to the hard right, in the same way there's a darkness to the hard left. So what are you, how, what is your answer to that? And I think that the answer is that, there's a Christian, for lack of a better word, conservatism, and then there's just a conservatism, and the
Yeah, for
Christless
sure.
right is frightening, and it is, it
Absolutely.
can be, cruel. It's like when you talk about, remember George Bush, George W had the, what do you call it? Compassionate conservatism. Is that what he
Yeah.
said? You
Yeah.
remember that? Yeah. Because, you could look at, like, Ayn Randian unrestrained capitalism that's just, dog eat dog, sort of eat what you kill world. I mean, that's not necessarily a vision of a Christian, beneficent ruler that you would want to have. Like, and so, the answer to that, my answer to that was that the answer to non-Christian right has always just been to baptize, to whatever extent, to make Christian, the conservative impulse that doesn't deny, some, for lack of a better word, liberal, leanings at the same time. I mean, there is a, it's like you look at the classic tension between pacifism and being for just war, or militarism in certain capacity. I mean, there's an extreme on both sides of those that don't do justice not only to the Bible but also to the sort of Christian intellectual tradition, but that doesn't mean the tension doesn't exist. And so we can't resolve the tension by just becoming Amish or becoming hawkish, Halliburton CEOs or whatever, or whoever makes the bombs. But we can live into that. This is an appropriate way to live into that tension, where there actually is one. And I think there's a similar challenge for us going forward, is that if there is a pendulum swing back, against some of the excesses of what we saw in, particularly in the 2019, 2020, then the challenge for us is going to be, okay, what is an appropriate reaction, and what is an overreaction to the what was an overreaction, And so I think that there is a way to talk about sexual brokenness and the universality of sin and the need for atonement with people who have been caught up in that lifestyle that we'll have to be very sensitive to. Nevertheless, holding the same convictions and confessions that we've maintained this entire time. And so that's where, again, it gets back to the necessity of a local church, subsidiarity, and the local pastor. Because, there's not a, I mean, as much as I appreciate the bishop's letters and the, like, even the papal encyclicals and things, like, the actual ministry and work of ministry takes place in the local parish, heart to heart, face to face. And, the way that you deal with your particular situation with someone wrestling with their sins is going to be, in general, the same, but in specific, unique to the individual. And I think that's what we just have to keep maintaining and modeling by God's grace, and hopefully watching sort of permeate the rest of the ACNA, because that we don't want to be reactionary and we don't want to be heavy-handed, but at the same time we do have some convictions that are that are decidedly out of step with the current cultural moment, and holding those with gentleness and humility, as 1 Peter 3 says, is always the challenge. And that's why in part we even do this. I mean, just to help figure it out for ourselves, and hopefully share a little bit with others, something of the wisdom that we're seeking to find on our own.
Yeah, we're coming close to the end, it looks like, of our time. But one thing that's always struck me about the dialogue between left and right in politics and in theology is so right now there is a pretty virulent and ugly strain of hatred for the Jewish people on the right and on the left, right? And on the right, it's associated with kind of the new nationalism, and so what tends to happen is people who are not conservative will look at that and they'll mesh it all together so that if you're conservative, you're necessarily associated with those people, and those people have some kind of and so this is one big blob of thought that's all connected together. So there's no distinctions made between, hey, well, these people are Christian conservatives, and so they don't hate the Jews, and they don't want to do all those horrible things that what's his name, Corey Mahler is talking about.
Jeez,
yeah,
that
no, but there's no distinction. It's just if you're on the conservative
guy.
side, you're a hater, right? You just hate. That's who you are.
He's a Lutheran, you're an Anglican, he's got a swastika in his Twitter bio, so you must
What
too.
in the world?
Yeah,
Lord have
so
mercy. like if you're in conversation with somebody who's in your parish or in your who knows you, and I know your political views are to the right of them, that's what you've got to battle that, because that's what they're thinking you're think that's what they're thinking you're like, that's what they're thinking you're associating yourself with. And so you've got this, you're already come into a conversation like that guilty. And this J29 is going to continue that kind of thing happening. It's going to continue to help people blur those lines. So that a pastor who voted for Trump is just like Corey Mahler, or so it's going to be. It seems to me anyway, just on the outside, it seems to me already an exercise in slandering
That's
pastors.
right.
So that's one reason I'm worried about it, is I think it can take people who are well-meaning and who want to help their who don't like all the fighting going on politically and want to keep their church out of it. And look at names they used to trust, like Russell Moore and people like that, and not know that the change has happened in his ministry, and just be caught into it and try and push it
That's right.
into their church.
Yeah, it's like when people say, like, we have to, we want to peacefully have dialogue about overcoming the 2,000 years of relentless oppression of women by men in the church or something. You're like, okay, wait. Like, I'm not signing up for that conversation. Like, I,
But I
in
said
general,
it
and
was going to
so
be civil.
that's right. And so, but I do think, I mean, I'm grateful for the clarity that people are bringing to these issues. I'm grateful for people speaking their minds, even when we disagree with them. At least it's bringing it all to light. I mean, this is what in part we've been doing this podcast for since the beginning. It's like we got to figure out what kind of church we are and what kind of church we want to be. And that requires a little bit about knowing what kind of church we don't want to be, or like we had been in the past. And so, I'm grateful for, like, I know y'all had David on again. I'm grateful for Dave Roseberry doing the Anglican. We have Bishop Martin Menz coming this Sunday, who's going to give the rector's forum, is going to be sort of details of the troubles, back in 2009 and 10. And these are all by design. It's not to keep wounds open, but it's to remind people of where we've come from. And I think the more we can do that, and the more with humility and grace, as much we can, the better we're all going to be for it. Whether that means that some people move into different denominations, or whether they have their convictions clarified or changed, and we just encourage those people who have the authority above us, who can sort of get to the bottom of some of these ambiguities, I think is a polite way to say it, would be motivated to do so for the sake of the under shepherds in their province. That would be my hope.
Well, that sounds like a good note to end on. We are toward the end of our time. Thank you for listening to Stand Firm this week. If you'd like to keep the conversation going, be in touch with us, rate and review the podcast on iTunes, send us an email at mailbag@standfirminfaith.com, or join the Anglicans for the Gospel Facebook group. We'll be keeping you up to date weekly on JD's family's trek across these United States. We'll be in prayer for him. Hope you will be too. Thank you to JD Koch and Matt Kennedy. I'm Nick Landon, and Lord willing, we'll be back next week. Until then, by the grace of God and Jesus Christ, we'll be standing firm.